December 14th, 2022. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online digital radio. You can also visit us on our website, thesportscast.net, and on Twitter, thesportscast1. Check out our app for iOS, The Sportscast. France, consecutive World Cup finales, just beating Morocco 2-0. France is back in the World Cup final, this time playing against Argentina. And join us today on, for this World Cup coverage, Hal Phillips, author of Generation Zero, Jaime Fernandez, and Asa Smith from Touchlines and Touchdowns. Welcome to the Sportscast.
Thank you, Santiago.
Great to be here, Santi.
Good to see you all, you guys, in the panel. I know each of you guys had your separate days, Hal for Monday, Hal for Wednesdays, but also after the USA games, Jaime on Wednesday, Asa for Mondays. Francisco couldn't show up. He's working tonight, but he comes on Fridays. He'll come back later this week. All right, so the match, unbelievable, France beating Morocco. What were your thoughts over this match, Hal?
Well, I think everyone was afraid or at least curious as to what would happen if France scored first and Morocco was going to be obliged to attack a little bit more. And they did give up an early goal. And I thought they played brilliantly after that. They really forced an incredible tempo on France. France just took back and absorbed it all and countered very effectively. But Morocco had a bunch of chances to score themselves. It was an amazing performance, especially seeing, you know, when you consider all the guys that Morocco had out. And of course, France had six starters out themselves, but we expect them to have more depth, and their depth did win out, I think, in the end.
Jaime, very intuitive of this Morocco team. You're very familiar with some of the players. They beat Spain. Of course, you're Spain. What were your thoughts over this match against France? Why couldn't they just go to the extra mile and beat them? But what were your thoughts over this match?
Well, it was definitely a great game. You hear me? Yeah. It was definitely a great game. I think, I mean, we all see that Morocco has more possession. They have shots. They have opportunities. And at the end of the day, I think what I'll say, like, it was even better that France scored, because the last thing I didn't want to see is another game of Morocco kind of like getting very into a block, like defending. So I'm glad that France scored quick, so that way we saw a different Morocco probably that we haven't seen, having more chances, going a little bit more crazy, attacking more into the wings. And definitely, I mean, discovering that is, I think, it's more than just a surprise. I think you put right now Morocco to play against any other team in the world, and man, they can do it. They prove it that they can do it. That they prove today that they are not only good defending, they prove that they can, if they want, they can have their chances. But of course, I think the biggest mistake, well, not a mistake, but the lack for Morocco is that maybe they have a good 11 star team, but when it comes to the substitutions, I don't know what happened with Nesiri. He substituted him so early in the game. And you can tell, like, the guy that came after Nesiri, he's not as good as Nesiri. So I think that was the biggest problem for them.
Yeah, substitutions become a big issue in this World Cup. Of course, you got five substitutions you could do. Previously, it was 3 to 4. But Morocco was not able to handle the changes and things like that. But what were your thoughts over Morocco, Hal? Do you think they just couldn't match up with this big France team?
No, I thought they played them toe-to-toe. The injury issue was huge for them. They had the two central defenders, one of whom didn't play, and they tried to play this Saïs. He went about 20 minutes and had to come off. And when he went off, they did start five in the back. But then they went to a 4-1-4-1. And they were dangerous the whole time. I think one of the things that I noticed was they got to the byline a lot in this game. They really attacked from the wing and they get to the byline, but when they had to play the ball across, there was maybe one or two guys in the box. They got forward. I wouldn't call it in waves, but they got forward consistently. But when they got to the byline, they couldn't pick out anybody because they were outnumbered 5-2 in the box. I actually went back and froze the TV screen a couple times because I was like, who did he even have to pick out? I couldn't see anybody. So in the end, they just couldn't get enough guys forward. But I thought they attacked as a team beautifully and were daring because they had to, as Jaime said. They couldn't sit back and they never parked the bus in this tournament. That's a very pointed term. I don't think they ever did that. they always played with tempo. They always got forward. And they were opportunistic tonight as well and had, I don't know, four or five great chances to score as the French did. It was a toe-to-toe even matchup, I thought, all the way around.
Yeah, we talked about this before, but like the whole parking the bus concept, it's a little bit different. It's more like you don't score in winning defense. You kind of play defense the whole match and maybe wait for a counter till later. What I noticed about this match, guys, was that France was letting Morocco be on the offense. They knew if France would have pushed up, they could have been screwed. They, you know, Morocco would have scored or whatever. So France played it differently. They let them control the ball and get them out of their shell. Exactly. We got Asa. Asa, your thoughts over this match, Morocco versus France.
So I think this match is actually a great example of game state and the effect that game state has on plans, right? Like the whole Mike Tyson quote, like everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And of the, call it 10 best attacking motions or movements by the French, that goal that they got in the fourth, fifth minute was not one of them. It was sort of like a weird scramble. It happens, you know, not that they didn't get the ball in a dangerous spot. And when you get the ball in a dangerous spot, who knows? But it's not like it was like a beautifully worked, you know, series of passes leading to an open shot. So I think that Morocco, I mean, I'm pretty sure this was the first goal they'd given up in open play in the entire tournament. They'd been suffocating people defensively. And then once France got that goal, I think Deschamps said, you know what, we can sit back and we can absorb some pressure because getting out on the break and on the counter, we can really, really punish Morocco. So I thought that what was most interesting is that I think that Olivier Giroud had a chance to end this game twice in the first half, because I don't think Morocco were ever going to get a second goal against France. But, you know, this game could have gone much, much differently. But I think that, you know, ultimately Morocco played well. Like, I don't think that France like bullied or bodied them. It's just, they got that early goal and Morocco couldn't necessarily play the game that they wanted to play. Because you're not going to really go, I don't know how many sides there are in the world that can truly go toe to toe with France for 90 minutes and expect to be successful. One of them might be waiting for them in the final, but Morocco certainly, as much quality as they do have, you know, 1 through 11, I don't, and certainly 1 through 16, I don't think that they had the ability to go toe to toe.
Yeah, and before this match, the only goal that Morocco gave up was an own goal, so Spain couldn't score against them, that's Belgium couldn't score against them, or even Portugal. But this time things were a little bit different. Let's go into the first goal. It was quite interesting. Mbappe came into the box, kick it towards the goal, I believe. And then Theo Hernandez scored. Jaime, what were your thoughts over that goal? How technique was it?
I mean, it reminded me a little bit to the goal of Julian Alvarez yesterday, because the fact that at this type of games, I mean, people forget, but it's not only about playing football and be the best. It's also about luck. And I think sometimes you need luck to be a champion. And that was the luck of France today, because they were lucky in that moment. At the beginning of the game, it was a rebound. And then Theo Hernandez happened to be there, which he did an amazing game for me. But he happened to be there and he scored. a very good goal because it was not easy. You look at that position and everything. He looks like a ballerina. He's like dancing with the ball. And not only he beat Bono, there was a defender behind Bono that wasn't able to reach the ball. So I think it was a good goal, definitely.
Very acrobatic. Of course, Theo Hernandez came into this World Cup because his brother got injured in the first match. I believe he got an ACL torn. So,
yeah,
interesting situation with the France injuries. Benzema is out. Pogba is out. How deep is this France team?
Well, here's how deep they are. As Asa pointed out, they can't play Rabiot today, who is himself a substitute for Pogba in the middle of the field. They bring on Fofana. He was outstanding, very steady. And they did the same thing with Muani. At the end of the game, they bring him on. He scores the second goal. I mean, I don't even know. I know Muani is because I know Tottenham is chasing him. He plays for Frankfurt, and I'm a Tottenham guy. But that's the only reason. He's 23 years old, and French just have these guys by the dozen. It's a little ridiculous. I'd like to hear from Deschamps at some point. You know, we didn't have a chance to read up, and I hadn't listened to any comments really about the game yet. But, you know, Ace's point is well taken. Once they scored that goal, it certainly makes sense to just sit back and let the Moroccans come at you now, and you can counter them to death. And you could see that the Moroccans are absolutely petrified every time Mbappe got the ball out on the wing. They had four guys converging on because they were determined never to let that happen. But, you know, the French have so many guys that they can go. I thought Konate was incredible today. He was everywhere, playing defense, getting into the box. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did he play in the group stage? They played Varane and...
No.
Not Konate. No.
Well, he played against Tunisia, I think.
Yeah, okay. I missed that game. That was the one that I didn't watch because I was watching the other group stage game. But, you know, just the idea that you can bring a guy as good as Konate off the bench is just, you know, just shows you the difference. We're talking about two different classes of roster here. But I do want to say, I thought the Moroccans were outstanding. I thought they were outstanding tactically. This coach, Red Ragui, he set them up to play defensive. They give up a goal. He changed it, and they carried the play throughout. And this fellow who plays for Fiorentina, I want to make sure I get his name right.
Yeah, I'm Brabant.
He was incredible. He played an amazing
tournament, but even today, he played better than any other game. At the end, I read this, and this is fascinating. At the end of the game, Macron, which is the president of France, he entered to the locker room. He entered to the locker room of Morocco to congratulate them for the tournament, but especially Amrabat. He said, "You are the best midfielder of this entire World Cup." He literally said that.
So just speaking on Spurs, Hal, I'm also a Spurs guy. He was rumored last year. So after getting Bentancur and Bissouma, he's no longer an option apparently. But Amrabat, he was phenomenal. I think the thing is with Morocco, you know, you look sort of through that lineup and you can see why they're good when they have belief. Because you know it's not like this is a bad roster. It's just when you go up against France, like if you can't really play from behind against a team like France because you have Konate and Varane and Hernandez, and when you have and Fofana just like off the bench, the backup to Konate, like you're talking about levels of this that are just completely unfathomable for a team not like France, right? There are three or four teams that can do this. And France is one of them. If any other team, you know, not any other team, but most other teams in the World Cup, just let alone throughout the world, you lose your top two defensive midfielders, you don't have one, right? Like if just use the, you know, the obvious example, America's third defensive midfielder, I think, is Jackson Ewell. So that's what we're talking about in terms of like drop-offs here.
Forget Jackson Ewell. The moment Acosta comes on, the entire team changes. I mean,
right.
So you're right, but let's not put the U.S. in the category of actual pretenders to the throne. And what before I forget, I think Mwani's price just went up.
Oh,
you're never going to get him now.
No.
He's crazy.
No.
I actually was checking the stats, and yeah, Konate played the first game against Australia, the second against Denmark, the third against Tunisia, but then he didn't play for the rest of the games, which is actually two more games, and he outstanding today. So it's crazy that it's what you're saying. Like it's crazy that France, doesn't matter who's playing, he's gonna do amazing games. So
it's their U23s would be a top five team in the world. It's just ridiculous. Listen,
how crazy is this that if the Deschamps needs, he can get the phone and say, "Hey, Karim Benzema, just come for the final, just in case." it's not crazy that they can do that call and say, "Oh, you know what? Benzema is still part of the roster. He can come." Actually, Real Madrid says today that they let him do it if he wants. In my opinion, he should do it. Why? Because this is once in life. If you win a World Cup, even if you're in the bench, your name is going to be in that list forever, forever and ever.
Which he's technically in the roster still.
Yeah, that's what I say. But it's not the same being in the roster that being in the bench. Yeah. So let's put this a scenario. Let's say France is winning. I don't think it's going to happen, but let's say France win the final 3-1, and in the minute 87 or 90, he put Benzema just to have 1 minute. That makes Benzema being part of not only the roster, being part of the World
Cup. He was part of it 4 years ago. He'll be okay.
No, he was.
No, he was.
Oh yeah, he wasn't selected. He was.
And I don't know if Benzema gets like a lifetime achievement award given the alleged activities of Karim Benzema as it relates to the French national team. So like there are a lot of people who could get like a lifetime achievement award. I don't think he's the guy. Not saying if what he did happened, I don't know. I'm not gonna, we all let the legal system play out as it were, but I don't know that he gets the feel good story of the year for France in the 87th minute.
No,
again, allegedly.
I think it's part of being in that team, because if he doesn't go at all, they are gonna consider him part of the roster. But if I was Benzema personally, I would not consider myself to win the World Cup. But if you are there in the bench, even if you don't play him a single minute, but you are with your team when they are in the pitch, I feel that's different, right?
Is he even in Qatar? I haven't been following it. Is he in town?
Real Madrid traveled to Doha. Yeah.
He was in Qatar at the beginning. He was going to play this entire World Cup. He was a little bit injured. So they decide like, no, you are not full recovered. But Deschamps, instead of calling another Ben Yedder or any other striker, he decides, you know what? I'm going to leave his spot because we might need him. And I don't think they need him, but it would be nice to have Benzema in the bench just in case.
I mean, first minute.
Well, let's be honest. Maybe Argentina is winning the opposite. Maybe Argentina is winning 2-1 and there is like 10, 15 minutes. You would not put Benzema, the actual Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, the actual winner.
If you want to win, he's a super useful piece to have that you can just like have like, we have a world class striker just if we need him. We probably won't need him, but if we need him, you know, he's there. Whatever, it's fine.
Well, there you have it, France into the final of the World Cup. Let's go into yesterday's game, Argentina versus Croatia, 3-0 goal by Messi in the penalty, which according to Modric changed the whole match. And then Julian Alvarez, 2 goals in the first half and the second half as well. Hal, what was your thoughts over this match yesterday?
Well, we talked about it before. I think Argentina is one of the few teams in this tournament that has gotten better with every match. And this was, I thought, their best performance. And they're, you know, they won this game going away 3-0. But, you know, I watched that match and I thought The penalty was dubious, and I thought the run by Alvarez, while thrilling, was lucky. It, you know, twice he bundled it away, and it both came right back to his foot both times, and all of a sudden they're down 2-0, and it felt like it was over. I still expected Croatia to come back and score the next goal, but they did not. I think they ran out of gas themselves. I don't know. They're, you know, the talk about sentimental favorites, I think enough gestures. Messi's taking up enough gestures of goodwill for everyone. And this is the final that I wanted, so I'm pleased with the result. But I watched with a bunch of Croatians yesterday, and they were not happy.
Asa, your tactical mind, what were your thoughts over this match?
So I think this is just another example of, like, games shift on moments. And as much as I like I'm nominally rooting for Argentina the rest of the way, and have been sort of since America lost, because I like Messi and I want him to win something, especially after a career of not winning things on the international stage. So I think watching this game is a really good example of soccer being ultimately a really, really weird sport, because the fact is that, like, Luka Modric et al. Did a really good job in this game. And you have these moments of, like, okay, Alvarez is really fast and really direct, and things happen. And okay, fine, great, things happen. And Messi gets a penalty that, do they call that a penalty for anybody not named Leo Messi? I don't know. Who's to say? You know, like, that. It's a question, but, like, stars get calls, it happens, whatever. But then suddenly you're in the 40th minute chasing a game with a 37-year-old as your best player. And that's difficult. It's a difficult situation. So, you know, I thought, just for my purposes, the guy who I was watching it, you know, as much as anybody else, is Coutinho Romero, who I thought played really well. And I really like watching him, because the better he plays, the better I feel about these things. I think Argentina is a team that is, I don't know how often this gets used outside of the, like, college basketball context, but, like, there's an element of team of destiny to this. Like, especially coming off that first game, right? Like, that first game, there was this, like, element of weirdness with them, like, losing to Saudi, like, what's going on here? And then since then, you know, I think, as Hal mentioned, like, just better and better every game. And are they as talented as France? No. Are they as interesting as France? No, but they have the best player in the league, in the world. And that counts for a whole bunch. So, in terms of this, I didn't think that the tactics necessarily were all that interesting beyond Leo Messi is really, really good at soccer. And once you sort of include Leo Messi is really, really good at soccer, everything else sort of plays along with it. But I do think Alvarez is a perfect complement. Like, having someone as fast and as direct to play off Messi is just really, really useful to have. I don't know if you saw the sort of the heat map, but most of the passing chart, I don't know who tweeted it out. It might've been John Mueller, but the way that Argentina were playing, it was just Alvarez playing really direct, like a wide receiver over the top, just taking the top off of the defense over and over again and giving Messi so much room underneath. It was really, like, an interesting tactical setup, because it's utilizing someone who, you know, at this point in his career, is Julian Alvarez the most technically sound player? No, but he's fast, and you have to pay attention to him. And if you have someone who's fast who you have to pay attention to, that gives Messi all of the room. And if Messi has room, he's going to create stuff. That's what he does. And he did. Also, I think that Josco Gvardiol, he probably lost some money on the transfer value, because I think Leo Messi, he makes the best of us look bad, but he made him look not good in that game. So that's what I'll say. But if you look at this map right here, you can see where Alvarez was operating. On that left, left half space or left hash mark, just direct and straight. And it was a really interesting thing for me to watch.
Yeah. Look at that. He map. There's a lot going on there. Jaime, this Argentina squad, you follow all these players. This squad looks a little bit different They say the supporting cast for Messi is delivering versus like the past teams. What are your thoughts over this Argentinian team?
Well, there is something different in this Argentina versus other Argentinas from other years is that Messi used to deal his leadership with other leaders. We have Agüero, Higuain, Di María. I just remember the 2014 Argentina, even the 2018. But now, this is what they did. Scaloni understands he has the best player in the world. So he's like, okay, why Barcelona was so good? Because everybody was playing for Messi and everybody was letting Messi do whatever he wants. If he wants to get the ball at this part of the pitch and start doing his things, nobody was going to complain. If he was going to dribble and do whatever he needs to do, nobody was going to complain. So basically right now, Scaloni, he made a team of young players to run, fight, and do everything for Messi. And exactly what Asif just said, like Julian Alvarez was like driving the defenders crazy, going from one place to another, and that created more space for Messi to make it happen. And when you let Messi have the ball and make it happen, he's going to do it. He's going to find the spot. And also, what happened is that since Argentina scored kind of like two goals very fast, Croatia didn't have any other chance. They need to go in the counter attack. So when you have your own team kind of like attacking, you're going to let Messi more space also. And Messi with the spaces, we already know.
Will happen.
He can put Guardiola, as we saw, in the worst spot, which for me, he has been the best defender in the entire World Cup, no doubt. But again, like, I don't know if you see how smart is Messi that he knows he could never beat this Guardiola by he's not faster than Guardiola at this point. Because this guy, he's like 22 or 23 years old. He's never going to beat him in a sprint. But look what he did in that goal that he gave the assist to Julian Alvarez. What he did is he waited, he got close to him, and with a couple of moves, he get it out of the way. So it was crazy. It was crazy how good it was, that goal.
Yeah, very, very awesome goal. And like, it's funny because Messi was holding his left leg twice in the beginning of the first half and also after halftime. So thought he was not 100%, but he did definitely pull it through. And I would say there's three names I like about this Argentina squad is, of course, Messi. I like De Paul, Alvarez, and my Argentinian friend says, look at Enzo. Enzo has been a huge factor for this team. Croatia, bright future ahead. This might be Modric's last dance, right, Jaime, you think?
Oh, it was for sure.
Yeah. They
pulled him off a little bit early to get that ovation. It was a nice moment. It was a nice moment, but I this has got to be it. He doesn't want to stick around for the next Euros, let alone the next World Cup.
Yeah, we'll see just how bright the future is without Modric pulling the strings. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I'll go back further than 2014. The Argentina team is so much like the 1990 team that Maradona dragged to the final. And that team also started that World Cup with a terrible, embarrassing loss.
To
Cameroon, I believe. And they sort of pulled themselves together and ended up, you know, getting to the final on penalties and, you know, against Italy in the semifinal. But the difference between that team and this team, and we've touched on it, is this is a much younger team. That was an old team. That was a leftover team, largely, except for Caniccia, you know, who was the Alvarez type, you know, straight ahead striker for that team. This team is younger, and they're still showing us what they can do. If I have a worry, it's Otamendi in the middle of that defense at 34 years old. Not a fan. This has not been a kind World Cup to aged center backs, and that's a spot that if I were France, I would be concentrating on.
leads to a perfect segue. The final is France versus Argentina this Sunday. Want to hear your thoughts over this match. Maybe a prediction if you want to say it, but want to hear your tactical preview. We'll start with Ace on this one.
Yeah, so I think that if I am France, so just from a tactics perspective, right? If I'm France, I trust my guys. And I'm going to find some, so I, and this might be like naive almost, or like whatever, or gimmicky, but I'm man marking Messi. I'm taking either Fofana or Rabiot or whoever you want. Who's in that defensive mid role, and just follow him. Just whatever. Because Alvarez is not, and Di Maria and DePaul, like the rest of them aren't really going to bother you in a way that I think France needs to change its shape or really adjust to. So I think that the idea has to be get Messi off of his game and let everybody else beat you. And if the rest of them beat you, you tip your cap and you say, well, they were better today. But I think that you cannot let Messi beat you. On the other side, I think that Argentina really needs to attack the fullbacks. I think that France has shown a willingness to get forward a little bit with Hernandez and name I'm blanking on right now on the right.
Koundé, pull up the roster a little bit. Sorry,
Koundé, thank you. You know, Koundé a little bit less so, but Hernandez has shown a willingness to get forward. And so from there, and you know, Tchouaméni, I think can get sucked up a little bit. I think that there is going to be room in those spaces. And whether that is, you know, whether that's Alvarez or whoever else, I think somebody needs to exploit the spaces that will show up. But it'll be interesting to see if France comes out trying to dominate the ball. I'm interested in that aspect. From a prediction standpoint, I think that 3-1. I think that France is going to ultimately manage this game. I would love it if Argentina were able to win, but France is really, really good at soccer. And ultimately, I don't know how you deal with that. Like there's only so much you can do tactically, because they can, to use a football term, like an American football term, they can play base. They don't have to commit numbers anywhere. So if they do a weird wrinkle, it's not going to pull them out of position. They can just play their game and be better than you on the day. Whereas Argentina needs to hope for some brilliance. Luckily for them, they have someone who can produce those moments.
You're very optimistic with both teams, I know. I am with Ace. I think France has a little bit of the edge. What's your thoughts over this tactically between France and Argentina?
Well, it's going to be a very, 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 of course, it's a final, a very tight game. Where goalkeepers, I mean, I think we can call this the World Cup of the World Keepers. It's crazy because they've been saving so many chances. And I think Martinez against Lloris, we already have a battle there. Then another battle between Mbappe and Messi. And it's what Asa say, like, of course, I would not let Messi even try to touch the ball. I will put Tchouaméni there. But at the same time, Argentina also need to find the way not to stop Mbappé only, to stop Mbappé and Dembélé. Dembélé is one of those players that maybe he hasn't showed up yet, but he's one of those guys that if he has his game, man, he can create you 5 or 6 clearly chances during the game, because he's faster, or as fast as Mbappé. He's crazy fast. So I think it's going to be a battle. I think France, for me, is favorite just because, again, they come from not only winning the last World Cup, it's just they know each other from so many years. This group of guys, they've been playing together in the under categories, and they really know very well each other. So I feel France are a little bit favorite, but at the same time, it's all about that Argentina. And, you know, the Scaloni need to read what type of game they need. Because I heard today, for example, oh, they might put Di Maria, they might put this guy. I don't think he's going to change anything. I think he's going to play with that same team that we saw the other day. Because, again, he's a little bit risky playing with so many young players like Fernandez, McAllister, Alvarez. But at the same time, they prove that they can beat Croatia, which it was one of the hardest.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think it's going to be, again, for Argentina, I would not change anything. And I would try. I mean, Asa has the key. He just say, if they have Alvarez going to the wings and trying to make create a space for Messi, for Enzo, for McAllister, these guys, that second line, they can do a lot. But let's see. I feel like France is a little bit favored.
Hal, your thoughts over this match?
Well, I'm going back to the beginning of the Morocco match. Had France not scored so quickly, would they have fallen back in the way that they did? And if there's no early goal against Argentina, who will want the ball? I don't see either one of these teams wanting to hold it. I see them wanting to counter the other. And will France, as the defending World Cup champion, as the de facto favorite, sit back and let Argentina have it in the way that Asa describes? They might. They certainly don't have to go to, they don't have to possess it, but I sort of think they're going to. I don't think they're going to want to come back and react to Argentina. I think they do think that they're better. When you play Fofana and not Rabiot, and I guess Rabiot might be fit for this match.
Yeah, Rabiot will be back for the
I think.
Final.
So they're going to be a little different. They're going to be a little more possession oriented. Fofana was great today, but not the same player going forward, I don't think. And Griezmann, you know, has been tremendous. I'm fascinated to see, you know, how this game shakes out if there's no early goal, because it's not clear to me who wants to hold it. I like Argentina. I like Argentina's youth. I think that they're going to play with this manic energy that we associate with good Argentina teams. And France has not played a team like that yet. I wonder how much, you know, whether they are too proud, to go back to the same theme, to put somebody on Messi, which I don't think is a bad idea, but, you know, World Cup champions don't mark other players out of the game because they're World Cup champions. So we'll see. A lot of open questions. It's a dream final. It's the one I wanted. I feel that Croatia got their just desserts because they denied us the Brazil-Argentina dream semifinal that I wanted. So I'm glad they're done. And now we get the game that we wanted to end what has been a tremendous tournament. I can't wait.
You mentioned Rabiot. Jaime, should France start Rabiot over Fofana?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Because it's what I'll say. Like, you need a little bit more of possession, and you need that smart guy. Let's be honest. I mean, Fofana would be great if you want Fofana to stop Messi. But you have Tchouaméni to stop Messi and to create. But you need that guy, like Rabiot, to also be able to get close to the area and create. Rabiot has been a very, very good partner with Mbappé and Griezmann. So I feel today they were missing a little bit of Rabiot, but I feel in the final he's for sure gonna play.
Interesting flip side to the tactics we're talking about. If you do mark Messi man on man, and it's Tchouaméni, just for the sake of argument. Well, then you have a defensive holding midfielder who's not where he's supposed to be on the field at all times. So do you leave Fofana to hold the fort on top of the defensive alignment that you have because you're marking Messi man to man? I don't, you know, this is where you get into the weeds and it's fun. Well, and Deschamps is the only one who knows, and he may not even know what he wants to do at this early stage. But if you do mark Messi man to man, that pulls your defensive midfielder all out of shape, and you may want someone who's going to stay at home more. But geez, how old is Fofana? 23.
Yeah,
that's a big ask.
Asa, what I'd like to have you follow up on that one, up your alley.
So I think that the game here, if you man mark Messi, I think that you use Fofana, because I think that Fofana, you just tell him, look, stay at home, right? Stay at home. Play is essentially the way you look at it is you say, like, Fofana, your job here is to play as a single six, right? Consider yourself a single six. And your job is to put out fires when they counter because they're going to counter. I don't think that job is outside of his expertise. Step up, put out fires. That's sort of your job. The question you then have is when you have the ball, when you have the lion's share of the ball, which you will have in this sort of scenario, who's the metronome? Who's making those passes? Who's getting the ball where it needs to be from defense to your very, very, very impressive attackers? If you're not going to play Rabiot, and if you do play Rabiot, he's not the guy to do that. I don't want him playing as what we would consider a single six or a single holding midfielder. Mm-hmm. Offensively, you want that, but defensively, you start getting into a lot of. I don't know that he wants to play sideline. So it's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. I think that really what I would do, like if you're asking me what I would do on this, is I would tell Koundé that you're not getting forward. We don't need you to get forward. We don't want you to get forward. Stay home. Make sure that anything that either Fofana or Rabiot can't get, you get. Play him sort of inverted in attack. And that's sort of how you would deal with it, because the real risk here is the counter, right? If you're one of your two holding midfielders is way out of position, how are you dealing with it? And I think the way you deal with it is an inverted right back, who's playing sort of as a possession, a holding midfielder in possession. Again, I don't know that you can effectively transition from defense to offense in that scenario. Rabiot does that in a massive way, but that's how I would deal with it. That's what I would say is my attackers are better than your attackers if I can get rid of Messi, and I will rely on my moments of brilliance more than yours.
Anything else for you guys want to say on that?
No, that was good, man. Santiago, where do you get these people?
Hey man, I can smell talent from miles away from California. So
we're better than the broadcaster from Fox or
anyways, let's do our final prediction score wise, and then after that we'll predict who's gonna win the golden boot, because Messi and Mbappe are tied at 5. So, and also Giroud has a chance too, he has 4. So
no, and Alvarez has 4 too.
Alvarez has 4 too. So this is a shit scenario. I never seen it. We'll see what happens. Anyways, prediction. We'll start with who will win the World Cup and the Golden Boot.
Well, I think Argentina is bummed because Mbappe did not score today. He's due to score. He's going to score in this final. But I think that's the only goal they're going to score. Argentina 2-1.
Argentina 2-1. And who wins the Golden Boot?
I guess I'm arguing for. Oh yeah, they split it, right? If they each score,
Jaime.
Do they right now they're tied, right?
Sorry, Jaime.
If they tie, I think there is kind of like I saw this before. When they tie, they count. I don't know why they count. If you didn't score, like maybe in penalties or something like that, they give you more value. I think so.
Yeah, non penalty goals,
whatever. This is why I don't care.
I don't care about the golden boot.
I think Argentina pulls it out, and I think that France is too proud to mark Messi out of the game, and he makes them pay. But I also think they're young studs. At least one of them will score themselves, and that's going to be the difference. And Lloris is going to be a problem.
I think if they tie, maybe they will give the golden ball to Messi and the golden foot to him.
On sentiment alone, for sentiment.
Okay, so there is a tiebreaker rule. It says if two players finish on the same number of goals, the award goes to the player with the fewer goals scored from penalties. One of you guys said it. Then the ones with more. Good.
That would be Mbappe, right?
Yes. Yeah, so far, Messi has 3 assists, Mbappe has 2 assists. Giroud has 0, and Alvarez has 0 assists.
Okay.
Jaime, your prediction and the Golden Boot prediction as well.
Well, let's just start with the prediction. I think it's going to be a 2-1 for France. I want Argentina to win. Don't get me wrong. I think it will be fair for football to see Messi with a World Cup, even that I'm a big Real Madrid fan. It will be fair also because Argentina lost already a final, and that's tough. These guys, some of these guys were in that game. So losing two final of the World Cup, it has to be very tough. So I don't want that to happen. But at the same time, I got to be honest. I think France, they are better. One by one, they are better players. And I feel in a final of a World Cup, you notice those type of details. And so I will say, yeah, the golden boot is going to be for Messi. I don't know why I see him scoring in that game at least more than Mbappe. And I don't know. Let's see. Maybe we get a surprise and we get Giroud or Julian Alvarez with two goals in the final.
It could be very possible. Asa, you did pick France to win 3-1. You could have changed your mind after 2 minutes. Your thoughts and who will win the golden boot?
Yeah, I've decided that 3-1 is a little aggressive. I was sort of like as I said it.
Come on, Asa.
All right. You know what?
Stick to your guns.
Yeah, I'll stick to my gut. 3-1 France, but the last goal is going to come on like a last minute nothing. Like it's not going to be like a 3-1 domination. It's going to be 2-1 until the 10th minute of stoppage time and you know, everybody's forward and somebody kicks and you know, wow, gets out, whatever.
Getting very granular with this prediction. I'm loving it.
Yeah, I mean that's what I'm here for. People call me Cassandra in my professional life. that's not a me being a woman thing, dear listener. That's a Greek seer thing.
Greek myth right there. That's Greek mythology. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. Oracle at Delphi. Anyways, I think that the golden boot is going to be Giroud. I think that he's going to get two. And I think that somebody who, you know, one of the midfielders is going to get one. And then I think Julian Alvarez will get the goal for Argentina.
There you have it.
So it is a 3-1.
3-1. Yeah, no. I
get the 3-1 in there, yeah.
Yeah, I decided to stick with it. Why not? It's not like anybody's going to like quote tweet me and be like, hey, man, you were wrong about that. It's like, yes.
Hey, one last thought, Santi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, last country to win two in a row, Brazil, 58 and 62. I think France is great, but they're not that great.
Interesting. That's a good point.
I wish I was alive in that time because one of my dreams was to see that Pelé guy like playing like the Angels or Maradona. I hadn't had the chance to Maradona I saw it, but at the end of his career. So
I mean you got Messi. It's not bad.
It's true. Now, if Messi does win the World Cup, who is better, Messi or Maradona?
The thing is, that's only a question maybe for people that they seem both in the best.
True.
We are not allowed. I mean, I'm saying Jaime with my age and Santiago, I know your age. So we are not allowed.
I was not around 86.
We are not allowed to judge somebody like Maradona. But
I thought you were gonna say that only an Argentinian could judge that.
Also, yeah.
I'm old enough, but I'm not Argentinian enough.
Or a Barcelona fan, because he had the two best Maradona and Messi.
And you know what? I think like an important thing to mention here, and maybe this is just like my view of sports in general, but like you don't have to compare them. It's okay. They were both awesome. And Pele was awesome. And, you know, the next one, whether it's Mbappe or probably Mbappe, but whoever the next one is, like, and they'll be awesome. And that's cool. And we got to see Messi, and Messi was the best of his generation, right? So, like, this is like my soapbox. So bear with me. But, like, I think trying to compare across eras is so unfair to eras because, like, the game that Diego Maradona played and the game that Pele played. And even the game that like Michael Owen played is so different from the game that Leo Messi played because the moment that Pep Guardiola did something that Hungary did was, you know, the last time, you know, the false nine thing that everybody credits Pep Guardiola with, which actually was invented by Hungary in like 1950, you know, like once they start doing that, it's like, oh, you don't need two strikers up top. You don't need a huge burly British guy elbowing people in the face in order to be successful as an attacking side. The game changed. And so who knows what Diego Maradona would have looked like in the game that as it looks today. Who knows what Pelé would have looked like without 10s, right? Like the 10 position has been eradicated. You know, that's what people always say. You know, would this have looked the same? I don't know. What I do know is that Leo Messi is a wizard, and it has been an absolute blast watching him. I hope he gets his World Cup, because that's it, right? Like there's no going to Inter Miami after winning the World Cup and being like, I'm gonna go play U.S. Open Cup against the Birmingham Legion at Legion Field in Birmingham, Alabama. Like, no, you don't have to do that.
Is boom or bust? For sure, we know this is Messi's last World Cup. He said it today. So the finale is this weekend, Sunday at 10 a.m. Argentina versus France. Before we go,
One second.
Yeah.
I don't agree. I don't think that's Messi's last
World Cup. Unless he loses.
Listen, no, because what if, as a player, we all have seen that these phenomenal players become coaches, and these coaches get World Cups, and they start a new meet.
You heard it here first. Leo Messi, manager of the U.S. men's national team.
When's the World Cup?
Bring him north.
We'll take it.
Well, there you have it. Great talk, great chat. Never had a good time like this in a while about soccer. Let's go into our contact information and tell us about your podcast, book, whatever you want. We'll start with Hal.
I'm definitely shilling my book these days, Generation Zero, Story of American Soccer, the Modern Evolution of Our Game Here, 100 Years in the Wilderness, books about the generation of players and fans that changed that, starting in 1990. So yeah, pick it up on Amazon. Generation Zero, Founding Fathers, Hidden Histories, and the Making of Soccer in America.
And also, I want to piggyback. If we're having debates about the coach and everyone's like Twitter fighting, we've gone a long way, right, Hal?
Yeah, except when people just saying, so an insert coach name here out. That is an ironic phrase used for clubs, people.
Jaime Fernandez.
I was actually on Amazon buying this book.
Good man. You're a man of taste and breeding, Jaime. I knew it.
I'm going to explore this. I love books. So I'm going to explore definitely this book. So I have my own podcast, soccer podcast, even that I consider myself bilingual. This podcast is in Spanish. I'm sorry for the non-speakers, the Spanish speakers. But yeah, Dame Bola podcast, that's the name of the podcast. And you can always text me, even if it's in English. I will be happy to discuss, talk about football. And please help me to finish this.
I'm all done. I finished it this week. But Asa Smith, the tactical man, what's the best way to reach you and also your famous podcast?
So I'm on Twitter at TLSTDS. I have ironically put hashtag Berhalter out recently, but I have also ironically used that phrase in all sorts of fashions because it is in fact ironic. Also Greg Berhalter's not anyways. You can find my podcast, the Touchlines and Touchdowns podcast. Half the time we're talking soccer, half the time we're talking football, because I started the podcast when I realized that the game of football, whether it was American or association, was actually the same, and everything is either and for those of you who are football fans, you'll understand this reference as well. Everything is single high or double high. Everything is two high or one high. It's just how you've decided to name things, which is why my point is that there's either one striker or two strikers, or there's one safety or two safeties. Same thing, I promise. Anyways, the last episode we have, it's dropping tonight. There's some lovely discussion about Gio Reyna and Greg Berhalter, and also a significant amount of discussion about what we talk about, which is to say sophomoric discussions of whether or not players are allowed to taunt. We have a 20-minute digression about whether or not taunting is good. Spoiler alert, it is. If you don't want people to taunt on you, don't let them score. Touchlines and Touchdowns podcast for all of your sophomoric desires.
Well, according to Borussia Dortmund, Hal, Gio is a good kid. So,
look, if we just listened, if we just take Gio at his word, this is a cut and dry situation, but I'm not prepared to do that.
Interesting time for U.S. soccer. Looking for what's going to happen next couple of months. Gold Cup and, of course, Copa America 2024. What was that? Oh, yeah. Okay, so you can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on Twitter and Instagram. We got more shows tonight, college football. And then Friday, we have Francisco Flores, who cannot make it tonight, will come in and we'll review again the finale between the Argentina and France. But this World Cup has been great. Surprises. I've enjoyed it so far. Winter World Cup, whatever you want to call it. And definitely met my expectations and hopefully it met yours. Guys, I appreciate you guys coming on to the Sportscast.
Cheers, sounds good fun.
And this was your update. World Cup.
Thank you, everyone.